from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 8th day of December 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear an excerpt from yesterday's recording of Commodity Week, and if you can stick around for the whole hour, you'll hear most of that program. Otherwise, find it online right now at willag.org. We'll also talk today during our program with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible about the weather forecast, and it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, and that means you, that's right, you are part of our partnership. Right now, we're in the middle of a couple of days of fundraising, and I hope you'll take a moment to go online to willag.org or willpledge.org, hit the donate button, or call 217-244-9455 and make a pledge of support for the agricultural programming that comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, and we're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Big Mike, you're headed my way on Tuesday of next week. You and I and Ellen Dearden and Steve Erdman will be in El Paso at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, and I sure hope we'll have a nice crowd there.
We need a good crowd out there, Todd. We need to have some fellowship together. We need to talk about the prices, and that'll be the report day, so we'll have a lot to talk about. And yeah, I got some really good experts coming in, and then I'm going to just sit there and listen to them and take notes. And if you have any ideas, I'll be happy to listen to your ideas as well.
Well, my job's to ask questions, I'm pretty sure. We'll be at the community building on that night, so hopefully folks will drop by. It's just one of a whole lot of events. You know, I travel a lot anymore. I get on the road. This week I was at the Van Trump Conference out your way. Next week I'll be on Tuesday with you in El Paso. That, by the way, is at the community building, which is right there at South Point Park. I think, if memory serves correctly, it's right next to the pool, the building is. So you can drop by there at 7 o'clock. And again, you, Ellen Dearden, and Steve Erdman from EFG will be there. That one's open and free to everybody. And Mike, also, the other thing is that it is now the 8th. By the 11th, those folks who want to come to the Illinois Farm Economic Summit and watch Todd Hubbs and Scott Irwin and Gary Schnittke and company, a couple, three or four others, need to get signed up. That's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Registration closes on the 11th for that one, so do that as well. Let's talk about what happened in Chicago today. Didn't look like a whole lot was going on, and kind of waiting for that Tuesday event from USDA.
Yeah, and it's a pretty key event. I hope everybody gets a chance to listen to the Commodity Week this week, because we did kind of key up and tee up the report on Tuesday. And I think after today's close, it's even more important. The reason I say that is because we had, with very little fundamental push and very little fundamental explanation other than continued weaker exports and a little bit bigger crop in Canada, the wheat market was able to crash 5.5% and down over 20 cents. We're now at a wheat corn spread of about 50 cents, 52 exactly, Todd. And now we have wheat as a feed grain. We have an 11-month low, and we have the next support all the way back down at 12-month levels back in December of this time last year of 369.5. And the reason, because of this technical negativity that we closed with such light fundamental pressure, and I think most of the fundamental pressure came from the outside markets, but be that as it may, we're now walking into a time period where this report has probably started to factor into the prices. In other words, I think we're on the top end of the trade estimates, both for the United States in terms of a 960 U.S. carryover is the highest trade estimate on one of the Newswire polls. World ending stocks, highest estimate for wheat, 270 million tons. I'm looking a lot for this report to not feed the bear, to not pressure prices, because it's real important to realize that the difference between Dease wheat and March wheat is 27 cents right now. We're only 6 cents away from where we were in last year at this time in March wheat. And last year at this time, March 17 soft red wheat fell about another 25 cents after the December expired and went off the board. And we have that later in the week next week after the report on Tuesday. So it's real critical we get something underneath us in terms of the wheat market fundamentally from USDA, or it doesn't look good for the March wheat as it takes over as lead month contract.
And if that is the case, because it is considered a feed grain at the at those prices, that will put pressure on the corn market then.
Yes, and I think that's the other element of this market this week that we talked about on Commodity Week, in my opinion anyway. I think you've got a soybean market that is just hemmed in, locked in, cannot move above the ranges of the short-term price action, cannot test the 1040 level, it seems, because the wheat and the corn won't allow it. And I think this is a trend that until we know the acreage base for 2018 and we see exactly the damage or lack of damage in South America's corn or bean crop, that the soybeans are going to continue to act this way in relative to, in relation to the corn and in the wheat. So it becomes even more critical than last year that wheat finds its market bottom. I think it can. I think it should. It's just, as I said on the Commodity Week, it's just an unbelievable trial of patience at this point.
Well, the good news is Commodity Week is coming up in about 2 minutes here, maybe a little less than that. So we'll get that started. And for those who can stay with us for the whole hour, they'll hear the whole program. Otherwise, they can go online anytime they'd like at willag.org, or they can listen to it over the weekend on many of these radio stations. Hey, Michael, thank you so much for all you do for us, and I do appreciate it. We'll see you on Tuesday evening in El Paso at the community building at 7 o'clock.
Look forward to it, Todd, and I'll be bringing some door prizes for everybody, so come on out.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Right now, we're in the middle of a two-day end-of-the-year fund drive for Illinois Public Media, and I'm hopeful that you are ag listeners. That's right, you will take a moment to make a pledge of financial support for agricultural programming. That's pretty simple and easy to do. I like the $120 level. More is really great. Less is perfectly fine. Whatever you can spare is helpful. You can do it online at willpledge.org, willag.org, and hit the donate button at the top of the page, or just dial this number, 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455. Here's why it's important. I think of our programming as a partnership. There are lots of partnerships. I work for U of I Extension. Illinois Public Media provides the broadcast option. The Illinois Farm Bureau, through its RFD radio network, gives us the ability to reach out to affiliates. And there are affiliates across the state of Illinois, for instance, in Clinton and Taylorville and Kewaunee and three other places up north if you're listening out of Sterling. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. However, it's important that you, our ag listeners, appreciate it in a unique way, because we're Illinois Public Media. We're funded to the tune of about 40% by you, our listeners, and it makes a big difference. Now, you can tell them that you're supporting agriculture when you call in or hit the checkbox or write it in when you're making a pledge online. However you do it, make sure you make that support financially right now and don't wait. We do lots of things throughout the year. What's it pay for? Well, in part, it pays for the staff that helps me to make sure that I can go out on the road. You may have noticed over the last 3 years, I'm on the road a lot. Last week, I was out on the road. This week, I've been out on the road. In Kansas City, in fact. And without the help of the staff here at Illinois Public Media, make sure those programs got on the air after I produced them and send them back to them, it wouldn't work. And we're really about that whole partnership. It's the right thing to do. Please do it right now, and don't wait. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. willpledge.org, willag.org, and hit the donate button. Don't wait. Do it right now. And, oh, thank you so very much. Now, yesterday afternoon, speaking of partnerships, we recorded Commodity Week. Our panelists included Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo was there, too, from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Speaking of which, Mike will be with us Tuesday evening in El Paso at 7 o'clock at the community building there. That's in South Point Park. Make sure you drop by. That's free and open to everybody. Ellen Dearden will be along with us, and so will Steve Erdman. I'll tell you more about that later on. But I did ask Mike a little bit about some of the outside markets and what he thought about politics in Washington, D.C., and the tax bill during Commodity Week.
My thought is this, that the tax reform, we've seen the metals essentially completely sell off. So it was kind of a buy the rumor, sell the fact. In the dollar, it was the exact opposite. It was sell the rumor, buy the fact. And the market, we're highs this week. I mean, it's unbelievable to have to say this because we're at a 2-year high or a 10-year high on 2-year bond yields after this massive financial crisis and all the stimulus. We finally have interest rates back to where they were in 2008 on a 2-year level. We're not there on the 10-year yet, but on the 2-year we are, Todd. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, this tax reform bill, as advertised, is inflationary. The 2-year interest rate being at a 10-year high and the dollar traded deflationary, and that bled over into the grain markets and the livestock markets this week, in my opinion. So I'm wondering whether it's not a short-term versus long-term deal where we have a short-term negative reaction. We sell off because we got the tax reform bill, but actually we're sitting here in 2018 with an inflationary market brewing, and all of a sudden the end users who, and I don't want to paint too pretty of a picture out there and false hopes this year. There's been plenty to go around for the grain producer out there holding a lot of corn. But I guess my point is this, is this a time when the just-in-time end user wakes up and his analysts and his economists say to him, start buying longer, get more underneath you because prices aren't going to go down as easily. They're probably going to start going up just because of interest rates.
I think, Dan, I'll turn to you. Do you have thoughts on this?
Well, I have a different take. I guess I think tax cut is actually deflationary, whereas tax increases are inflationary. And the reason I say as taxes are all passed on to the consumer, so when they increase taxes, that is always reflected in higher prices, whereas when they decrease taxes, then you don't have that upward pressure. So I guess I would be more inclined to think it's deflationary, and I think that's why the dollar is beginning to strengthen based upon the tax bill if it goes ahead and gets passed. So I guess I have a little different take on that. I would rather be a buyer, sure, and that's where the money's all going to go. But, you know, I don't, you know, I would like to hope to think that Mike is right, that the end users will come in and start buying this market. But the end users that I talk to, it's like watching paint dry. They say it's terribly boring to even go to work.
So you're of a mind that the Dow Jones Industrial Average bull market is about to end or topping?
No. I'm still buying breaks. I think stronger dollar will make the Dow go higher, and I think it'll keep pressure on commodities. Now, you know, one has to worry a little bit. I mean, this Dow has been basically straight up and you begin to wonder how far it can go. But I just don't see higher interest rates in the cards. Every government tax entity is broke. The pension systems are broke. And I think any kind of higher interest rates would just totally send the economy into a dizzy. So I guess I'm not I just don't think interest rates are going to go higher. See how that goes. This cheap money can't last forever.
Dan, let's explore where you are on the charts for soybeans in particular, and we probably should do corn as well.
Sideways, I think. You know, soybeans were in a nice, you know, sideways to higher uptrendy channel until here about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago. We broke underneath it, and then we've been kind of crawled back into that uptrending channel. And we tried to do that here, I guess, on Tuesday. The market failed to close in it. It fell back and kind of closed right on the bottom end of that uptrending channel. So now I just take a look at it, and I just basically draw two lines going sideways. I mean, you take a look at the late September lows, and you connect them here to the early November lows, and then you connect it to the top end of the basically the mid-October highs, and then you look at the highs that we had this week, and it just looks to me like January soybean futures are in a 965 to a 915 trading range. We basically fell back to the midpoint of that trading range. So I think it's still waiting for something to happen. Maybe, you know, the South America thing still has, you know, maybe some legs, some weather issues down there. We have to wait a couple weeks on that. When you take a look at corn, I think it's the same story. You basically corn in a, I call it kind of a 340 to 360 trading range. And December corn futures still has another week or so to trade, but the functional contract is the March futures, and it's right at the middle part of that trading range of 350. So I think March futures, though, are vaunted this 345 area fairly quickly. So maybe we're going to maybe widen out this March corn futures trading range into the, you know, 345 to maybe 360. But I think it's kind of sideways for now when you look at the futures market. But there's one thing that I did really like. What happened last week, and that was in the Central Illinois cash market basis. And you saw Central Illinois cash corn prices that were in kind of like a 305 to 320 trading range for several weeks break out of that 15-cent trading range. Now, with the weakness we've had the past couple of days, we've kind of slid back to the top end of that trading range. And I think it's real important for us to be in this 320 area for Central Illinois, too. I think that confirms that we have made the turn in corn and the seasonal lows behind us. And now we're again waiting around for something new to happen as we go into the new year.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He joined us on our Commodity Week program recorded Thursday afternoon, along with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. You can hear the whole of our program online at willag.org. Just look for Commodity Week. There's about another 30 minutes of it there. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast, not only here in the United States, but across the planet. Where should we start today, Eric? Oh, and thanks for being with us.
Well, Todd, today's going to be a really interesting day for the southern United States. We've been watching how that colder air that's kind of slid through us has made its way all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. But a couple miles above, you know, above the surface, the flow is still out of the south and kind of southwest. And what's interesting is that's producing this really broad shield of precipitation over that much colder air right along the Gulf Coast, getting over to the East Coast. Central United States. And why I say that's interesting is we might be seeing some snow through parts of southern Texas, getting into Louisiana, going across parts of Mississippi and Alabama, and then into Georgia. And honestly, you know, down there they don't have the snow removal equipment nor the experience with the snow to handle it. So today's going to be a very interesting day for the South. But you know what? Bigger picture, they need this precipitation. It's been drier for the last 60 days down there, so this is good for agriculture on the South right now. But if we just take a look at the overall pattern and what we should expect around here, the bigger picture is still the thing we've been talking about for a while. That pattern flip happened. We have a bigger trough that's kind of sitting over the Hudson Bay near the Great Lakes. And so our focus will be on any sort of little, what we call shortwave. These are little kind of perturbations, little shortwaves that kind of round the base of that bigger trough. And each time they do, they produce what we call clipper systems, these very quickly moving little shortwave troughs that kick off these little low pressure systems that bring us some precip. And because we've got enough cold air kind of hanging around, we're going to watch one of those come through later on tonight into early tomorrow morning. And out ahead of that, as the air is lifted, we're going to be producing some snow showers. And so we could expect to see tonight maybe a first taste of some snow showers around here. I'm not expecting much accumulation. This is moving pretty fast, and it doesn't have too much moisture to work with. But we could see some snow showers tonight into early tomorrow morning as this first of these clipper systems kind of comes through. But what's interesting is I see a parade of them. I see four or five of them all kind of lined up, keep coming around the base of that bigger trough. So we could see on and off chances for snow showers like this, you know, we'll call it the next 10 days or so. But we're not talking major accumulations at this point. Now, that's a different story if I talk about the eastern half of the Corn Belt, especially Michigan and any location that can get lake effect snow. The lake effect snow machine is going to be on, and it's going to be blasting those particular locations. And the East Coast is going to be seeing quite a bit of snow as well. But that's our overall setup. And what's interesting about where we are here in Illinois is that we're right on the edge of where the really cold air is going to be. What I mean by that is, out west, there's a massive ridge, and at times we're going to be able to get the influence of that ridge over here into this part of Illinois. While the eastern half of the country keeps dealing with that big trough, we could see a couple of days where we get back above average in terms of temperatures, but then each time the big trough shifts a little bit to the west, we get back below normal temperatures. So it's a very interesting setup, and we're kind of right on the edge of all of it. Now, if we kind of just take a look at what all this means in terms of agriculture, it comes back to something we've been talking about now for a while, and that is the central states have really missed out on the precipitation for the last 60 days. And I got to keep watching it and keep watching it, because this flow pattern of a deep trough over the Northeast, that's a dry pattern for the central U.S., and this will impact wheat production if we don't get some moisture back in that ground. This will certainly impact what the beginning of our next growing season looks like if we don't get moisture back in the ground in the central states. So we just got to keep talking about it, Todd. I got to keep mentioning that is the situation. Now, let's just take a quick trip south of the border here and talk about Brazil. In Brazil, what we're watching right now is that the northern growing regions, so think Mato Grosso, Goiás, the Tocantins, and getting to the east, the South American convergence zone is just dumping rain on them. So maybe this week and the start of next week, we're going to be seeing really, really wet conditions there. It's important for cotton planting that's going on there right now. They're trying, you know, over the next 30 days to be moving toward their first harvest. So this is a lot of rain, kind of at the right time. But in the southern growing regions of Brazil, this week is looking dry. It's also looking dry in parts of Argentina. What we're going to be seeing is by the time we get into next week, it looks like that precip band is going to shift farther to the south, kind of letting the northern region dry out just a little bit. They're going to be below average on their precip. But Argentina's the place I've got some concern about, because we've seen a rather dry pattern over the last 30 days in that location, you know, in Argentina. And if that continues, it could just mean some more stress on the crop there. So there's quite a bit to be watching in South America. But the thing is, right now, the precip, you know, the monsoon is flowing, and therefore there is precipitation to be had. So they're not in major danger of drought. But, you know, what we're all anxiously awaiting in the meteorological community is, yeah, we do a lot of neat things to try to do our long-range projections with analog models and understanding relationships between big, you know, variables like La Nina. But we get a lot of assistance from our global models, and they're going to be updating probably midweek next week. So I look forward to getting that new data into the overall picture of what I think January, February, March are going to look like, both for the United States and, of of course, for South America, as that could really put some, you know, some pressure on the markets, just given what we think might happen with a little bit drier weather in South America.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Snodgrass is from Agrible. You can hear his forecast, in fact, the forecast from all of our meteorologists on our website anytime you'd like. On demand, how? Well, just go to Illinois Public Media's Ag page. It's at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, and hit weather.